Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We're revisiting some of our previous Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We're taking some time this summer to revisit some of our previous conversations with guests. And this week, we're going to be revisiting our conversation with Ryan Hawk. Ryan is the founder and host of the Learning Leader Show, a leadership podcast with millions of listeners in more than 150 countries. And he has written a couple books, How to Grow from Top Performer to Excellent Leader, and it was voted the best leadership book of 2020. And his second book, The Pursuit of Excellence, sold through its first print in 8 hours. Forbes wrote, The Pursuit of Excellence is the most dynamic leadership book of 2022. He's a keynote speaker and on leadership-related topics. He's got some great thoughts to share, and this was actually recorded prior to his second book. And so we're going to spend time talking about his first book. Looking forward to today's conversation with Ryan. Well, I guess, first off, could you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career career history?
Sure. So my background's in athletics growing up playing sports. I went to college on a football scholarship, played quarterback, initially went to Miami University, transferred to Ohio University, where I finished my career, played briefly professionally in the Arena Football League. Then had to get a real job once they told me I wasn't good enough to keep playing professionally. And got a job working in sales, a smile and dial type job, cold calling at a company, great company called LexisNexis, where fortunately was able to learn from some of the great people who were there and do relatively well and get promoted a number of times, or earned my MBA while I was there. And at the same time, right after I finished my MBA, I was curious to learn more from leaders who I looked up to. And so I started my podcast, which is called The Learning Leader Show. It's been about six and a half years and 430 plus episodes. And that was the biggest inflection point in my life that changed everything. 3 years into that, I got promoted to a VP of a North American sales, a $500 million business at the sister company of LexisNexis called Elsevier, working in healthcare. And a year after taking that job, I walked away to do this full time, record podcasts, keynote speak, consult with leadership teams, help others essentially write books, build online learning academies. So I've done that now full time as my primary source of everything for almost 4 years. So that's where I'm at now. One book out, another book coming out in January. But the podcast is kind of the foundational piece that makes everything go. 100% of my business comes from people who have listened to that. So it's pretty neat that I think following something that was just a sheer curiosity has now led to my life's work, which I certainly didn't intend for that when I started. I just did it out of just to create some sort of opportunity to speak with people who I looked up to, speak with people who I was impressed with the way that they went about their business. And I thought maybe if I get better at interviewing and ask good questions and develop listening skills, maybe it could help other people too. So that's why I published it as a podcast. And it's been pretty neat. It's been pretty cool to see what happens. As you know now, since you're doing it, I think having long form deep conversations with a fascinating person is like one of the coolest ways to spend an hour. So I'm very grateful that that's what I get to do most of the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I've listened to your podcast. You've got great guests here. You have a lot more shows under the belt than I do, and appreciate you talking with us today. And one of the questions I love to ask our guests is, you know, if you were to spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old knowing what you know now, what would you tell Ryan as far as advice that you'd give him?
Whatever it is that you're doing, do it excellently. Value excellence. I don't know if I necessarily did. And I don't know if people do. I mean, I didn't. But value that. And it doesn't really matter exactly what you're doing at the time, but try to be excellent at it. Try to view yourself as a value-added resource in the world. If you are, like, this is what I say when people get caught up in politics or other things. If you focus on adding value to the lives of the people around you, you're going to be fine. If you get caught up in all the garbage and the mess out there and you're not adding value to the lives of other people, you may not be fine. And so if that's like your number one focus, like, am I adding value to my teammates at work? Am I adding value to my boss? Am I adding value to my customers that I'm working with? Am I adding value to my company? Am I adding value to my friends? And just asking yourself that question each day, like, how am I doing that? What am I doing to ensure that I'm doing that? If you live a life of adding value to other people and consciously thinking about that and doing about that, you're going to be fine. This is what I learned from my dad. Like, he doesn't even say this. He just does it. It's just his standard mode of operation is just adding value to the lives of other people. And I think if you do that, things will probably work out. And then obviously some of the core tenets and basics of great attitude, great effort, understanding how to respond to adversity, like, all those things are really important too. But if your core tenet is like, how can I add value to my boss, to my peers, to my teammates, to my company, to my spouse, to everybody, I think you'll be in good shape.
Right. Great advice. You've got a new book that came out at the start of the year, and I've started to read it. I haven't finished it all yet, but it's got some great content. I think it's actually designed for our audience. I think if I were to write a book that would help as far as somebody in their career, I think the title is Welcome to Management, How to Grow from Top Performer to Excellent Leader. We have a lot of people listen that are first-time leaders or kind of moving into that first CEO spot. I think it's a great topic. Why did you write the book, and what kind of was your motivation to write it?
Well, I wrote the book I wish I had when I first got promoted. So I was as I mentioned, when I got into the profession of selling, inside sales job at LexisNexis, I did well to where usually what happens when you do well is they give the people at the top of the stack rankings the opportunity to apply in an interview for the management jobs. But as you know, probably as well as anybody, just because you were great as an individual contributor doesn't mean you're going to be good as the manager or the leader of that team. And what happened in my case, even though I have a background in leadership from playing quarterback growing up and being in leadership roles on the field, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing in the business world running a team. There were parts of the job that I was okay at. I could run hard and do it myself, but having an understanding of that now I have 17 people who directly report to me, who are 17 completely different personalities, who approach their boss differently, who need different things, who are motivated by different things. I was not very good at it initially. And so my hope is when somebody gets promoted for the first time, you get a big congratulations, you shake their hand, and you hand them this book called Welcome to Management, because it's your Welcome to Management moment. I write about there at the very beginning of that about some of my Welcome to Management moments. When I would call my dad, who's still my number one mentor in life, and say, like, can you believe what happened? I'm 26 and this 44-year-old mother of two told me her husband cheated on her and he wants a divorce. And she's asking me for advice. What in the world is happening here? Right. And that's when my dad said, well, welcome to management. That's how it works, and get used to it. And unfortunately, this probably won't be the last time that happens if you choose to continue doing a job like this. He was right. So my hope is that others don't make the same mistakes I made. So I share a combination of personal highs and lows, as well as what I've learned through some of the first few hundred episodes of my podcast of how to best handle and how to do three things, right? Lead yourself, build a team, and lead your team. And I think that those are big parts of a management role, especially if it's your first one. Fortunately, the cool thing about the feedback I've received is that senior level leaders, people in big jobs that have been in leadership for a really long time have said, this has been very impactful for me too. Not only do I gift it to new managers, but I've implemented some of the ideas myself in my senior leadership job. And I think that's pretty cool that's happened too.
Yeah. So you talk about the first section, leading yourself, and you talk about two basically areas, leading yourself inside and then also outside. Can you talk a little bit about just a little bit of some of the insights that you give in those that first section?
So I think it's important to understand the perspective that others have of you. That's a part of being aware and having awareness. That's part of the emotional intelligence aspect of it. So not only do you need to know yourself and do the work to be thoughtful and to self-reflect and to understand what you believe and what you think, that's the inside part. The outside is understanding how you're perceived, how others receive you, how they receive your message, how it feels to be in their shoes. So you have to, I think it's important to do heavy work and to assimilating a team that is there to give you honest, direct feedback from a place of love because they care about you. And so whether you call that your kitchen cabinet or your mentor board of advisors or whatever you want to call it, it's really critical that your who, those people you surround yourself with, they're the ones who are who are there for you, who are there to say, hey, man, when you said that thing you said in the meeting and you just got a bunch of head nods and everyone said yes, people are afraid to speak up to you in the meetings. And here's why, right? This actually happened to me by some of my top guys that I surrounded myself with that reported to me. And it was such a valuable tool to have people who were willing to have the guts to say that. And so it helped me, I think, work better with all of the members of the team because I had people willing to say, this is what it feels like to be in that meeting room with you as you the leader. Like, I know what it feels like. I sense you understand what it feels like from your shoes. I'm not sure you know what it feels like from ours. And so we need to help you with that. And so that's why I think having a good sphere of influence, the people around you, is really critical, especially when you're newer, because you probably don't know yourself as well. Mm-hmm. And you're still trying to figure out how to go about it. And you don't necessarily know what it feels like to receive the message that you are sharing. And for me, it still is really critical to have those people. I maintain people like that regularly. And I'd say that's kind of the difference between leading yourself on the inside and the outside.
So you talked about your dad as one of the biggest influences in your life. Were you intentional as far as putting other mentors around you in your early career, or talk a little bit about the importance of that?
I was intentional, but also lucky. So my dad was very helpful to introduce me to people that could play that role. And some of those people still play that role for me. And the cool thing that happens is when you're impacted by a wise, thoughtful, kind, loving mentor, is it makes you want to have more of them. And so they can be contagious because you're realizing, oh my gosh, that was so helpful. I need to do this more. And so I would say just the act of doing it and having this great feedback loop made me want more and more and more. And now it's just a critical part of my life to surround myself and actively seek out and ask for feedback from people to say, what did you think of this? Please be specific in your feedback. I promise you're not going to hurt my feelings. I'm trying to get better. And I think when you do that, you find some of your, as my friend Brooke Cups would say, you find some of your foxhole friends, and your foxhole friends are the ones that are there for you when it's tough, but they're also there to tell you, like, dude, you messed this up. You need to fix it. Here's what I think you should do. And they're gold. I mean, they're so valuable. And I'd say that's a big critical component to leadership too, is it can be a really lonely job. As you know, like, you're placing CEOs, super lonely. They need people around them, close to them, that will tell them the truth, that will help them, that will be there for them, that will sometimes just be a sounding board or a person for them to vent to. And I understand that job. I mean, I work with senior leaders, and that's sometimes my role, is just to be a sounding board, a person they can vent to, and then ask them questions and hopefully offer them some ideas. But it's tough. It's tough. So you need others. You need people around you.
So a lot of the people that listen are maybe in that position where they've got a team that they've inherited. We talk about building a team, but most of the time when you're a new leader, you're inheriting an existing team that you're having to lead. Talk a little bit about that, as stepping into that new leadership role, some of the things that you've learned from others as well as in your own career.
I learned this from football coaches. So this actually came from Urban Meyer. I believe Tom Herbin got the Texas job, their former coach. And I don't know exactly what he said, but essentially he was like, wait till we get my recruits in here. Wait till we get my guys. And first, what a terrible thing to say about the current players, right? And Urban said, the second you agree to that job, they're your guys. So if you agree to a leadership role, that instant, they're your team. You become responsible. If you raise your hand to be the leader, yes, I want this job, they're your team. You have to make it work. You can't just fire everybody. I mean, I'd probably ask you, Mark, you know better than me. If you hire a CEO, yes, sometimes they make changes, but you can't flip the whole thing upside down and get rid of everybody on day one. It will not work. You can make some strategic moves here and there as you go, but you can't just fire everybody. They become your people, your team. And I think that's a mark of an excellent leader, is to finding a way to work with what you are given. I mean, they say that's a mark of an excellent coach. Like, I'll take yours and beat you, and I'll beat you with mine. Basically, we could flip sides, because I'll figure out how to make that work. I think the same is true in the business world. I mean, when I got promoted, they put me like they normally would for the first time manager. All right, we're going to shuffle people around. You're going to have the team that performed lowest on the stack rankings for the last few years. And you have four openings. So you got to fill spots, and you got to try to turn this group around. You can't just fire everybody, especially when you have four openings. You can't just fire everybody. So you got to do the best you can with what you got. You got to let them know that this is our team. Like, I'm with you. I'm in it with you. Here's what we're going to try to do. Try to find some of the early adopters, the people who are in on your message, right? Build them up, get some champions, create some small wins early, try to get people on board. You got to show up with some excitement, right? Some enthusiasm about the job that you're there and passionate to do. And I think you do those things, and you got a better shot for people to get on board. But if you're one of those people who think, well, just give me a year or two until I get all of my people in, I would not hire a leader who says that. Like, just wait till it might take 2 or 3 years to get all of my people here. I would say, man, we don't have time for that. Like, you certainly can bring some of your people. I know that happens with leadership roles, and that's fine, but you can't flip the whole thing upside down and think that we're going to do well anytime soon with all this crazy change. So I think you got to find a way to make it work with at least some of the people that you have there, or most of them.
And I think the importance of, and you talk about in the book, of getting trust from your existing team and the people that you're leading. What are some just practical things you can do as far as to gain that trust?
Well, lead with trust. I mean, make the trust wager, as Jim Collins and Bill Lazier would say, that I just looked at their entrepreneur 2.0 that Jim released recently, about a year ago now. If I lead with trust and I say I'm naturally trusting first, I'll make that trust wager. You're going to attract the type of people that are more trusting than if you're skeptical or you don't believe people. And so I think that's one part. Another way to build trust pretty quickly is to lead with vulnerability. My friend Jason Gaynard says that relationships move at the speed of vulnerability. I completely agree. And so from a leadership perspective, you have to go first. You can't act like you're perfect, like nothing's wrong, like you like everything's polished, and they're like, that's not real life. Like, life, as Brent Beeshore said on my podcast, is really messy. We're really gray. It's not black and white. And I've led with trust and try to build trust with others quickly by showing up saying, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. Here's some of the flaws. Here's some of the things I think I'm good at, where as opposed to acting like I'm perfect or like I don't have any issues. In the football world, my brother and I talk about this all the time. We can sense when a coach is not being authentic. When they see another coach, maybe they worked under him or her at one point, they see how they behaved and they just try to copy them. Well, I think it's great to take bits and pieces from other people you've worked with, but when you sense that it's just a full-on copy of somebody else and you're not authentically you, you're not vulnerable, you're not sharing, I think it's hard to trust people like that. So to me, it's one, lead with trust. So I go in trusting you initially, Mark, like I'm going to trust you. Now, if I happen to get burnt by you, that's a bummer. I'll move on. But I would rather do it that way than opposed to making you spend forever to earn my trust. I'd rather just lead with it and see what happens and roll the dice and every once in a while get burned than just being a cynic or skeptical all the time. And I don't really, who wants to follow someone who's a cynic or skeptical? I don't. I like to commit to people who are like juiced up, who lead with trust, who are excited about things. They believe in people. They believe things are going to go well. They believe people are going to do the right thing. Like, that's who I want to follow. And so I try to lean into that as well. And again, another thing I've seen my dad do extremely well in his career and life is lead with trust and with enthusiasm, and people seem to get behind that.
Yeah. I always love talking to people who recommend other leaders for roles, because you can tell in their enthusiasm for the person, they'd say, I would work for that person wherever they go.
And yeah,
that enthusiasm is sometimes it's the thing that sells me on the person, to know that, you know, somebody else says, you know, they're trustworthy. There's somebody I can follow and know that they're going to lead well.
For
sure.
Love it.
Talk about, as far as you have in the last section, lead your team, the spread the message. Talk a little bit about that. What is that concept, and kind of unpack that?
Well, I mean, when you're sourcing, I mean, do you talk about this, by the way, on the show? You can cut this if you need to. Do you talk about like your sourcing job or no?
I do once in a while. Actually, when guests bring it up, so we can talk about it.
I'm guessing when you're sourcing a candidate for a senior leadership role, how important is it that they are an effective communicator?
I would say it's number one. If they don't come across and don't communicate well, you know, it's typically not going to work.
It's one of the foundational skills needed to be a senior leader. Well, really, to be a leader in any job. If you're a leader, I talked to Jocko Willink about this, and he's just like, it's critical as a Navy SEAL leader. It's critical as a quarterback. It's critical from a management and leadership perspective. So, I think, I go around and speak at company events a lot, and usually I ask to go at the beginning of the meetings. I like to set the tone, and usually the CEO goes first. And so sometimes I follow the CEO. And so I get to kind of listen to the message and hear what they say and hear how good they are from a communications perspective. And sometimes, you know, there's some good ones. Bert Bean from Insight Global is one of the best CEO speakers I've ever seen. But unfortunately, most of the time, I'm left kind of underwhelmed as I'm getting ready to go up and do my thing. And I think when you ask some CEOs about this, they'll say like, well, we have just so many other things to do. I didn't have that much time to prepare, or somebody else put the deck together and I kind of went through it and then went over it. I'm like, that's boring. That's terrible. Like, this is so important to be able to effectively tell a story that moves people. Not just show graphs and boring PowerPoints with a bunch of words and lines and stuff, but move people through stories. And so my three-part process of speaking and storytelling is story, science, practical application. I'll unpack that. So the story engages you. It makes it exciting. It makes it fun. It makes it memorable. The science makes it true. So you cite the research or whatever it is that makes the story you told true. The practical applications answers the question, so what, why should I care as the person in the audience? And CEOs, I feel like, should always be thinking about this as they're getting ready to speak to their team. What's the story to grab them? What's the science to make it true? And what's the practical application? How does this impact me? Or what is my role? Like, you announced our vision or what we're trying to do or the four main points. How do I impact that? What can I do to help us hit that? And you clearly state those things, and you're a little bit funny, and you tell some good stories along the way, and you make sure that it's all true. I mean, I feel like that's something we should be working on all the time. If you want to go to CEO school, that should be one of the first classes they teach, is how to be an effective storyteller and share a vision and move people and engage them, as opposed to being caught up in numbers and regurgitating a PowerPoint that the CFO put together. And so I think that's something that I unfortunately see a decent amount, that when a CEO gets it right, love it. Absolutely love it. Like, you got to know the numbers and all that stuff. I'm not saying you don't. You do have to know that stuff, but you also have to be able to effectively communicate the story to the team to help move them, to inspire them, to want them to be excited about working there. And I think that's a part a lot of people struggle with, mainly because it's really hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially when you're doing it in a compressed time period, and a lot of times CEOs, they have a certain amount of time that they have to share the message, and it's a lot harder to do a 10-minute speech or a 15-minute speech than it is to go for half hour or 45 minutes. And so definitely those are some key things that I think will help somebody in their career. And if you can stand up in front of a group, you can definitely go a lot further. Those are the people that typically
get for promoted.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Well, I know our time is closing here shortly, but tell us a little bit about what you do to recharge outside of work. What are some of your things that you do?
I mean, I really enjoy a physical practice. And so whether that's walking, sprinting, lifting weights, I'm a 7-day a week guy when it comes to recharging through pushing myself physically. I think it helps with my mental health, maybe more than anything that I do, is feeling like I'm really pushing myself. And Scott Galloway on my show told me there's a life rule for him that you should sweat more than you should watch other people sweat. And I like to watch sports, so I'm watching other people sweat. So I like to try to live up to that rule by sweating more than I watch others who do it, especially hard in the fall when you have the red zone channel and for the NFL games, which can be long days. But I would say first and foremost, I think it's very healthy and it's almost necessary, at least in my case, to be pushing myself physically in order to get my mind right as I move forward. So that's how I start each and every day is by some sort of physical activity.
So any parting advice that you'd give to a new and up and coming leader?
I mean, it's when you raise your hand and choose to be a leader, it's not about you, it's about them. You do have to lead yourself first in order to then lead them, but it becomes more about them. I learned this from my grandfather, my dad's dad, Dean Hawk. And I would say he's one of the most selfless people I've ever met. That's what a real leader is all about. They understand that they now have the massive responsibility to support and serve and be there for people and do everything they can to help put them in a position to do well. And I think if that's your core focus, things will probably go better if you're constantly focused on trying to help other people do well.
Great. So how would somebody learn more about you? I encourage everybody to pick up your new book, but how would they learn more about you and your podcast?
Is this audio and a video or what?
Yes, what's both.
Yeah.
Right.
So, if you're audio only, you can text the word learners to 44222. It's an easy way to get everything I do for free. As well as, if you just want to go to my website, it's learningleader.com. That's where everything is. My podcast is called The Learning Leader Show. So if you want to listen to that, there's years worth of episodes that are out there for free. So, check those things out.
Great. Well, thanks, Ryan. Sure appreciate all your insights and your new book, and definitely encourage everybody to pick that up and listen to the podcast to become a better leader, and wish you continued success.
Oh, Mark, I really appreciate it, man. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.